What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the show. It's episode 543 of the show. I am your host, Andrew, and this is your source for tech, gaming, and entertainment news. Entertainment. I don't know why I say it like that. But this episode 543, Danielle is hanging out with me on this episode as well. We talk about Pixel Ripped 1995 as well as Streets of Rage 4 by way of review. We also catch up on the news of the week. And also, if you're planning to start a podcast, definitely check out our code TSR, that's capitalized TSR, with Libsyn, and you'll get 1 month free. Enjoy the show. Daniela, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I used to do that. I used to do that song with my son. He's not a morning person like me. So it's like me trying to convince myself that it's good and me trying to convince him by being positive. I don't know if it worked most of the time. Probably didn't.
How have you been?
Pretty good.
Okay. How's the week?
Great. It was work. It was interesting. Interesting on the parenting side of things. Interesting on a whole lot of stuff.
Okay. All right. But,
I don't know. I guess maybe tomorrow we find out if on Kauai we get to ease up on some of our restrictions. Okay. Some of the other islands are, and I don't think they should be, but we officially, I think last week I said we only had one case. We officially have zero cases now.
Mm.
Zero. Not that we had a whole lot. I think we peaked out like, 21 cases in total, but now okay. all 21 have recovered.
Okay. That's so awesome.
We're sitting in a solid zero for the last several days.
That's good news.
Yeah, and our mayor hasn't like really said much. Like he like hinted towards like if we get like no new cases by the third, you know, we can start seeing some of the rules lessened.
Right.
I don't know what that exactly entails, but I know for like Oahu, they've already started doing that, which is kind of a little bit insane because they have the most cases. And they're allowing, I guess, some small businesses to open, but more about like one-on-one businesses, so like your hairdressers.
Right. Which is weird.
Yeah.
But okay. Like they're still closed. Like, how are you supposed to cut my hair if you're not gonna be closed, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's something that I did. That was really interesting. So I think it was like Sunday. I texted my boyfriend. I'm like, hey, can I cut your hair? I cut his hair. And I've only ever really cut my son's hair, which is just your typical Asian straight hair. And he doesn't like anything fancy. And my son's at the point where there's a very particular way he wants his hair styled. Well, at the moment, he's like trying to grow it out, which is driving me insane.
What kind of hairstyle he's trying to get?
I don't know. He describes it as an e-boy, sus boy. And I'm like, okay. Whatever. What I describe it as just long and shaggy.
Okay.
And he wants a perm. And I'm like, I am not giving you a perm. I draw my line right there. You're not getting a perm. It's not because I have anything against perms. It's just like, I think I'm projecting like that age where I asked for a perm and then I regretted it. I regretted it so much.
Because?
It was like so bad and frizzy and just, it was a pain. Like, I love curly hair and I love natural curls and they're beautiful. But just the artificial ones, it's just like on me particularly, it just was not good. And then like to see it on my son, I'm like, how about I just give you like temporary waves? Like, I'll just put little curlers in your hair at night and you'll have waves for the day.
Mm.
No, he just wants this perm. I'm like, oh no, I'm not. If you get somebody else to do it for you, fine. And then I'm just going to laugh at you.
Okay. Wow. Thanks, but, Mom.
But my boyfriend has natural curls. He has that Puerto Rican hair, so it's really curly, and he doesn't at all put any product in his hair, so his curls never really stay together. So he constantly runs his fingers through his hair, and it just looks into this giant, messy fro. It was not even a good looking fro. It's just this puffball cloud sitting on his head.
Mm.
So I asked if I could cut his hair.
So without giving details, how's he doing?
He's pretty good. Okay. He's at work right now. So we're getting through. He's changing up his stream schedule, feeling a little bit positive about things, which is great. Changing up his what he's been doing and, you know, stepping up his game.
Okay, sweet.
But here's the catcher. Cutting curly hair, I've never cut curly hair in my life. I don't know if I ever want to do it again. But the kicker here is that I told him I watched a TikTok video.
You so watched a TikTok video
to cut hair.
Wow, really?
And yeah, I did. And I watched it like 10 times. And here's the thing. I thought I don't know. Again, I knew he has curly hair, and it was such a pain. And curly hair here in Hawaii is not a super common thing. So the barbers here, they're really, really, really good, but I don't think it's something that they're really super skilled in. They don't, like, he's never gotten a bad cut, but there are certain things where you can tell the difference from a barber in, say, like, the East Coast, where there's plentiful of Puerto Ricans and Dominicans who have the similar type of hair, the natural hair that he does.
So you're saying they lack experience?
Yes, they do. but it's
that's a nice way to put it, Daniela.
they do. It's like, they're not bad, but they're just, you know, it takes them a while, and there's certain like you can see within the fade where it just doesn't look like that good. Like it could be better. So I did it, and of course me, like again, after I watched it, I started cutting his hair. I realized like the video I watched was of an Asian man with straight hair cutting his hair.
Wow.
And I broke my first clippers. I broke my clippers halfway through cutting his hair.
How'd you
his
do
curls,
that?
His curls snapped something inside my clippers, and it just stopped cutting. And I'm like, oh my God, we cannot do this. I ran to Walmart, and Walmart was sold out of hair clippers. I started calling around friends. I started like, come on, somebody's got to have clippers. And my sister came through. She had it. She had a really nice pair of clippers too. And I finished his hair. And you know what? I got to say, I'm really proud. It turned out really good. I was actually amazed.
By whose standards, Daniela?
By his and his family's, his mom's. He was like, wow, it actually came out good. I'm like, I know. Look at that fade. I was so proud. You have no idea. I'm gonna DM you a picture, but I did that. I would never think that I would ever, like, I don't know, cut hair and it turned out good. My son always gets nervous if I cut his hair.
Well, it's a scary thing.
See, look, you can look at the picture. I sent it.
Okay. You got some skills. I'll give you that. I see it. Yeah, that's dope. That's dope. Nah, you did a great job.
See, it's not bad.
Nah, you did a great job. That's dope.
So I was all proud of myself. Super proud. So that was an accomplishment. I don't know if I would ever do it again. It took me 2.5 hours.
Well, it'll take you less time if you do it again. That's how that
I don't
works.
Know. I don't know. I was nervous the entire time. But I was proud of it. That was the highlight.
That's good. That's good. Anything else?
Been?
Anything buzzing in your atmosphere? How have I been? I'm okay. We had a Zoom memorial thing for one of the senior ladies that recently passed, and we got to doing that this past Friday. What time was that? Noon, I think. Noon my time. So we did that, went through that, and we found out that my daughter's school is completely, you know, shut down for the rest of the year. So that was a very emotional day yesterday. I'm okay. Was wondering why my son wasn't working this morning, so I gotta go figure that out. That tidbit and learning the back end of YouTube stuff. That's been fun. And yesterday was, I think, a breakthrough. So I have to as I understand it, because really for me, it's like, if I understand it enough, then I'll probably, like, you know, teach it in some way, shape, or form, over, you know, either in conversation or something like that. But YouTube is very specific about its resolution. And if you put the wrong stream key for a resolution that doesn't match your OBS, it wigs out. That's what I'm concluding happened, which is why it broke for me. But I was able to stream Streets of Rage 4 for like 6 hours at 1080p with no problem yesterday. So I'm like, okay, so I think we're on to something here. So so just been doing stuff like that, figuring that stuff out. Did an interview with the guy who did Freedom Finger this past week, and also I did with one with Sean Alexander Allen, who did Treachery and Beatdown City. So those two will be in the feed at some point, very, very soon. I think that's about it right now. Coffee is really great today. I don't know what happened, but it's amazing. And I don't know what's for food later, but yeah, we're just chilling right now. We're just chilling, catching up and trying to be normal, but not really. What else happened? I had a leadership meeting yesterday with the church stuff, caught up with my sister and my family via Zoom, because I used to live in Haiti. So that whole crew who we grew up with and the same home in Haiti was on that Zoom call. So that was kind of special. I really appreciated that. So that was yesterday. So we're trying to be normal in the midst of all this technology usage stuff. And I think that's it.
You're so much more productive.
Is it though?
I don't know. I think you're still keeping a good stride through things and getting through work and stuff like that. And nice balance of the personal interactions. Well, personal indirect interactions. Since yeah. It has to be through Zoom.
As long as things don't break. As long as it doesn't break, then I think we should be good. Because it's like, even our internet bill was like, the promotion ended, so it kind of went up a little bit. So we're like, man, you know, thought we had a handle on that. And then I tried to call to see if there are any other promotions to kind of bring it down a little bit. But, you know, it was like a 45-minute wait time and stuff. So as long as the internet stays, you know, relatively perfect, then I should be able to do most of the stuff that I do. And also trying to, really write things down and then check them off, you know, whether that's creating a video or editing a podcast, like even like right now with the things I was just saying, there's two podcasts that I need to throw in the feed and I don't feel like doing it right now, but I know I need to do it. So at some point, I have to just buckle down and then just get it done while still trying to figure out the YouTube stuff and how I want to go about creating on that platform and if that's going to be long-term. So these are the things that are, I really like YouTube though. I don't know.
I was cool. Gonna ask you, like, what are you thinking? Like, how are you liking it?
I like it. It's, so the sense of community is there. But in terms of, tools to make them more, tight knit. Is not the same, right? So Twitch has all these things that makes it tight knit. Yeah, you can do a Discord for YouTube as well and stuff like that. But I think my main reason for taking a focus change a little bit off of Twitch is because once I create a video on Twitch, there's no SEO value there, right? The SEO is zero. So, and most individuals, they're going to watch some kind of VOD, their default is still YouTube, right? And you get SEO value for that. So for a video that I would stream, let's say Streets of Rage or whatever, right? And I do a playthrough of that. That playthrough dies as soon as I turn off Twitch. Because VODs don't get that many views unless you're like the top 2, 3, 4% of Twitch, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's archived on YouTube, then sooner or later, somebody's going to stumble on that. And that those clicks will be more valued on the YouTube platform because it's Google, right? Versus Twitch. So my issue and my challenge was trying to figure out how it works, right? How to connect stream elements to it, which was relatively easy. But how, if there were restrictions and, you know, 720p, 1080p, you know, that jargon conversation that happens between transcoding stuff with Twitch stuff versus YouTube stuff. But I wanted to run a test stream on YouTube and see how long it will run without it, you know, breaking or having issues. So I did that yesterday with Streets of Rage. So I ran that for like 6 hours, and I ran it at 1080p. And I installed this thing. So this is interesting. This is value added here. So I installed this thing called this AMD encoder plugin for OBS. And mm-hmm. although it's an AMD encoder for OBS, it still gives you more options than the current NVENC encoder built into OBS, right? So basically what happens is when I do the drop-down menu, I have the NVENC option, and then I have this new NVENC option because of the AMD encoder plugin. And then that one is more involved into the settings that you could do as far as like, you know, bit rates and B frames and all those different things. So it's a longer list of options if people are interested in that, right? And I've been using that, and that's been working really, really well for OBS. So it's a quick install. I'll send you a link to it. You could definitely check it out. And I've just been having a lot of fun trying to learn how YouTube works and communicating in the comments. The comments have been pretty good for me. You know, people are relatively nice with me, and I think that, I don't know. I think everybody should be nice, you know what I mean? But you don't always get that. And for the individuals who are not nice, it automatically goes to spam for me anywhere for YouTube. So it hasn't really been a. It just feels great that when people are measuring metrics, there's just a. It's so much easier for them to just go to YouTube, right? There's no reservation there. And I feel like sometimes there's a reservation for people to go to Twitch, especially for archived files, unless you do clips. But people can, you know, scrub through the YouTube. It's just different. It's just how people think about it. It's different. And that's what I'm noticing.
You think you're going to make a full-time switch to that? To YouTube?
Pardon me?
Are you going to make this like permanent switch over to YouTube?
I don't think so. Because I still love what Twitch represents as far as how it builds communities. It's just that I know for long-term content, when I'm trying to either, you know, pitch to a company and stuff like that, if I have a playlist of a series that I just did that I could just pitch to them and it's already on YouTube, then I think that's just a little bit easier for me to do. I think the marketing of it is a little bit easier for me to do it there than it is on Twitch. But having Twitch in my, I guess, Rolodex, if you will, or pitch deck in some way, shape, or form, I think is still valuable. I just don't know. And I guess that's where I would ask you, like, I just don't know where I want to go with it right now, because I haven't streamed on Twitch in the last couple of weeks, right? Because I've been doing a lot of YouTube stuff. And I don't miss it. And I think that's kind of bad, because there were people coming in and out of there. And I feel like I need to find a way to make them work together, right? Mm-hmm. So do I do 2 days here, 2 days there? Or like, how do I separate that? Do I just focus all the tutorial stuff on YouTube and then just do once or twice streaming on, you know what I mean, on Twitch? Do I do like, let's say, do I do Streets of Rage 4 stream on Twitch today just cause? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out the balance for me. So yeah, that's where I am with it. But in terms of SEO valued metrics and stuff like that, my focus will still probably be YouTube.
Okay. I'm like the worst part. I can't tell you about Twitch right now. I haven't streamed in 2 months. That's way too long. this month is going to change that.
And I think the restrictions too, like the transcoding restrictions, is tough, especially for individuals who are just starting on the platform. You're restricted to 720p to some degree, and then I guess you get 1080p at partner, right, or something like that, where you get the automatic transcoding for whoever wants to watch. The way YouTube sets it up is, as long as you set up your encoder properly, and then you verify the stream key that you're using with that encoder, we'll give you whatever you want for that resolution, right? So I have two keys set up, one for 720 and then one for 1080. But the 1080 could be by default because it still transcodes down to the other resolutions. So I could probably just leave the 1080 and just keep testing that with probably, Destiny and Warframe and all those games, because they're more visually intensive than a game like Streets of Rage. So I'll probably run that test maybe today or sometime this week to see how well it handles a bigger game like that, right? With the graphics and all the explosions and all that stuff they offer. So I'll run those at 1080p. And if those runs well, if they run well, then it's just, trying to decide how I want to calendar on both platforms. And I'll probably even reach out to some PR people and say, hey, what do you think is what catches your eye more on a pitch deck? Do you care if it's one or the other? Do you want them to, So maybe I'll reach out to a PR person and ask them that question. But I think I already know the answer because when I was talking to Mandy, who does marketing and stuff like that, so she was saying that when we're looking at VODs or thinking about VODs, we're not thinking about Twitch for VODs. When we think VODs, we think automatic YouTube. So it may be in your best interest to do, YouTube stuff and do VODs there and make it presentable as far as your playlists and stuff like that. So I already have the answer. I think it's just trying to entertain what I want to do. Let me rephrase that. I already have the answer from her, right? Because that was a conversation that I had with her. So it's just trying to figure out how I want to navigate that for myself.
It's a lot to take in. I feel someone tried to ask me, and it's really a lot to explain into like a whole other show by itself. Really, the question that was asked to me was like, what's a good platform to start streaming on if you've never streamed before? And I feel like each platform, whether it be Mixer, YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, they all have their own type of personalities and the people that gravitate to it. And really, it really depends on your personality, what you want, what you're looking for.
Right.
And it's like, well, what do you mean? Aren't they all the same? And it's like, it's a lot. And for somebody who wants to get into streaming, even if it's for casual, but even if you're streaming casually and you're not going, you're like, oh, it's going to be my full-time career and I'm going to be a content creator, you still want some type of growth. You don't want to just feel like you're streaming into the abyss. You want some type of growth. And really, that just kind of depends on the content that you want, the personality you're going to develop, and what you really like, what you're aiming for. And the thing is, you just got to kind of dip your toes into all of them.
Right.
See where that fit is for you.
Right. I like the SEO stuff, right? I like to be able to learn how SEO works to my benefit so my content can be discovered. I like that, right? Because I like how someone recently put out, I'm trying to remember where I heard this, but they said Twitch, as much as it has a lot of different things going for it, at the end of the day, you're trying to navigate the platform and it's a platform of popularity. That's, at the end of the day, right? Once somebody finds their favorite content creator, they seldom, even if there were metrics on how much they watch their favorite versus the others, it's always going to be a bigger percentage of their favorite, right? So at the end of the day, when you're looking at that platform, you're building communities, and don't get me wrong, a lot of individuals have built great communities and have tremendous successes on the platform, but it is a popularity platform, right? And you'll see the same names at the top of the for the most part at the top of the spinning thing that they have on their main hub or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I know these names, you know, but I may not necessarily connect to them. They're finding ways to introduce other sections are up and coming and different things like that. And I think all platforms are doing the same thing, but it's like you said, they all have their strengths, right? And I think that for me, as I still feel like I'm building, you know, whether that's, you know, brand related or any content related or authority and what I understand and what I can teach, I think that that can only be respected on YouTube. That's how I feel. I could be completely wrong there. And I guess, you know, if you're listening, just, you know, you can hit me up at Uriah on Twitter, U-R-I-Y-Y-A. I could be wrong there. But I feel that in terms of authority, you know, the podcast, like if you look at, you know, how many episodes you recorded, you respect that. It's over 500. You got to respect that, right? Because not a lot of people make it that far, right? And when you look at certain content and how people present it on YouTube, you respect the fact that they have authority and what they're teaching. It's just how it's, you know, currently set up for those platforms. For Twitch, you have different forms of content. Like, it's interesting that Gary V checked out Twitch for a little bit and he hasn't been on it ever since. I think he had stopped completely, like cold turkey. Like, it wasn't a platform that he saw would promote and the content. I think really the main reason behind that, you know, unless he got back to it, but I haven't seen him really get back on Twitch for anything, is the fact that the content discovery doesn't exist on the platform. And he's a marketer. And as a marketer, and we're all marketers to some degree, whether you want to believe it or not, anything that we say or do on social media to some degree is marketing, right? Whether you're marketing the fact that you have a prestige over a particular product, whether you're marketing a particular health lifestyle, whether you're promoting a particular agenda for your culture or other people's cultures, or you're defending a particular culture, it's all marketing at the end of the day. It could be subtle, but it's all marketing. So when a content marketer who's really good at what they do, you know, that particular entire team decides to not even consider Twitch as that platform, it's very telling. If you respect that marketer's point of view, let me just add that, right? So it's different. It's different for everybody. You know, I know what I'm going for this particular season, especially where we are right now with this world stuff that's happening. I want my content to be found. And it's not necessarily a subscriber issue for me right now. Because the way YouTube works, from my understanding, is if someone watches my content, it promotes the same kind of content either in the recommended section or whatever. But the longer you watch my content, the more my channel is going to be valued in that algorithm. And as long as I'm creating content that I'm proficient at, that's going to be to my benefit on that particular platform. And I think we've done that. We've done that with voice meter stuff and trying to do the interview stuff there and all that. I think that has benefited my lens of content creation right now. And then staying off the social media drama stuff, which I can't do that anymore. I realize that my tolerance for it is super low, so I don't even engage in those things anymore.
Yeah, I stay away from that. It's like the best and smartest thing is there's no need. It doesn't directly affect you. Why bother? But yeah, it's just you just got to feel them out. That's really all you can do. And I mean, you got to see what fits you. It's like trying on clothes.
Yeah.
It looks great when you're looking at it, but when you try it out, you're like, it's not for me. It's not a good look. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's where we are with that stuff. But, yeah, so I was looking at the video that posted yesterday. So this video was about 6 hours. On a regular day, you'd be happy if you get 2 views on your VODs on Twitch. Is that fair? 2-3 views? Maybe 4, right?
Yeah.
On a VOD. And that's just, yeah, go ahead.
I think VODs are good, and I feel it's very rare for people to really go back and like watch it. Like, amazing supporters will, and viewers, they'll go back. If they missed your stream, they'll go back and they'll watch it. And I've had that happen. And I notice that happens because you can still comment on it, and then like you'll get a notification, oh, so-and-so commented on this. But it's very rare that people do. And really, like, I think the most unused feature, but I feel like still gets a lot of attention, is when people put up like not just clips or highlights, but they upload it like you would upload like an edited video that you would to YouTube, you put it on top of there. Like, that gets a little bit more traction than your VOD does.
Right. And the reason I bring that up is this video from yesterday got 23 views, 1.8% on the impressions click-through rate, and the average view duration was 23 minutes. Now, 23 minutes is a long time, right? For anything. For anything, right? So I look at that, and then even when I think about the tags that I put in for this particular YouTube video, this was a Streets of Rage thing, which we'll talk about later. We definitely have at least 2 games to review on this thing and some other things that we want to talk about. That I'm looking at this video. There's no commentary on it, right? At all. There's just 6 hours straight through, you know, in and out of co-op, jumping in and out of co-op, maybe 1 or 2 playthroughs within that that video. So I could easily cut that and just do different things with it if I needed to for, you know, clips and different things like that, right? So I'm looking at it. I'm like, over time, well, even the last 6 to 8 hours, you know, 23 clicks on a 6-hour video. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Now, going back to the tags real quick, I didn't add the fact that it doesn't have any commentary, right? So if somebody's looking for a video straight through without any commentary, without any reviews, without any impressions or reactions on a video or whatever, I'm right now missing out. Because I don't have the no commentary on it, which is a quick tag to put in, which I may just do, you know, sometime today. But the fact of the matter is, I didn't do a lot of promotion for this video to get seen. That's the point, I guess, I was trying to get to. And YouTube allows that because of the SEO stuff that it has going on. And yeah, so try, you know, the platform, see what you like. You know, I'm still testing out YouTube and Twitch and then go from there.
It's funny. Another thing to really think about is not even just your platform, but just as a content creator in general, like the formula for everybody is different. And it's amazing to say that because there's so many people who I guess will call themselves or consider themselves content creators. So what works for one person is probably not going to work for the next. Because that person who's successful with whatever formula that they created is tailored to them and what works for them and what, you know, like what success they came out of. You can't replicate it. You can try to your best to imitate it.
Right.
But like you can't do what Dr. Disrespect does. You can't do what Good Game Bro does. You can't do what okay, Ninja is not even part of that equation. Like he's in his own world.
Right.
But you can't do what they did to find their success. And even for like your Ashley Christ, what she does really well. And it took her a while to find that groove, that formula that worked for her.
Right.
So when you're jumping in, you can look towards those people for inspiration, but you really got to draft that layout for you and what you want in your goals.
You're right. You're absolutely right about that. All right, so a couple of things that we have in the news. How much time I got with you?
We got time. I'm in a rush. I'm okay. In my pajamas. I'm ready. I'm here.
You're in your jammies?
Yeah.
All right, first thing I saw that caught my attention this week, I think we'll weave the reviews in and out of this, is The Last of Us Part 2 stuff. Apparently it's getting a June release, but also there are leaks this week. Thoughts on that?
Wait, say that again. I don't know why I just don't, like, not tuned out, but I just, like, I zoned out there.
That's all right. So Last of Us Part 2 gets a June release date.
Oh, okay.
And then there are also leaks and of the story this week. What do you think about those?
Okay,
right,
so I'm like in the middle. I understand why I tuned out, because I have it actually on Twitter, just those words muted, like The Last of Us. Okay. Not because I don't care for it. It's more of I didn't want any spoilers for it, because that's terrible. First of all, the people who just purposely go out and do that, they're like a whole other level of evil. I have no respect for people who do that. I don't even know why they would think anybody wants to be spoiled about the storyline or any leaks for any game, movie, book, whatever it may be.
Mm.
So I have those things kind of muted out, and probably why I just have it internally muted in my head. Oh, those are the keywords. Hear nothing.
Hear nothing. Once you hear Last of Us, check out.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I don't want... But no, and it's so hard. It's so hard for any type of media to have to deal with that, whether it be video games or movies or books, to have somebody who does that and ruin it for their fans, for their community. So I feel for them on that, but I personally, because of that, I've been avoiding it, because I don't want to. And I've been terrible about it, because I oh man. I'm going to get hate for this. I haven't even finished The Last of Us 1 yet. I'm bad. I'm really, really bad. I started the playthrough with my boyfriend, because we just wanted to both... He's already played through it and finished it, but I didn't. So I started it with him. And it's kind of on those things of like, okay, when our times can align, we'll play together. So it's taking forever to get through. But it's a good story, and I don't want to be spoiled. And I've been managing all of these years amazingly. This is how good my tuning out and muting has been, because I have not been spoiled for The Last of Us 1.
Hmm.
So, been really good about that.
Okay.
Avoiding any spoilers for number 2 still.
Well, I won't play it because I got creepers when I played the first one. A little bit of the first one at a convention or whatever. And I was like, oh, I got to work through these individuals who can hear my every move. And if I mess up, they're going to come attack me. Nah, I'm not down for that. I don't need that tension. So, I mean, of course, I feel for the individuals who are like super into the game, that the story was spoiled for them. But outside of that, for me, it's not a game that I'll probably play. I'll probably watch the cutscenes. I think cutscenes are really dope in a lot of games. You know, even when you look at Death Stranding, a game like that, cutscenes are amazing. You could watch that in a movie, you know, grab your popcorn kind of thing. So I'll probably do that. I probably won't play Death Stranding unless, you know, they add a FPS element or something, but I doubt it. But it's something that we're going to see a lot of, whether it's the leak stuff or the cheating stuff. It's something that we're going to continually see in a lot of big blockbuster games. And it's sad, but it's just something that you just have to avoid, and you don't want to be part of the individuals who are spoiling that story and sharing it, right? So I didn't even look at the leaks. I just wanted to mention the fact that we are aware that they happen. That's it.
Yeah, you're not gonna be spoiled here. We're good at that.
Yeah, so I'm trying to stay away from that stuff. The other thing I did see, DICE shifts focus on next year's Battlefield. The last Battlefield... The last Battlefield is a beautiful game, but it was just, you know, bugs and glitches and stuff like that really, really hit it. So I don't know if you've followed any of the Battlefields the last couple of years, but I'm trying to see what they're trying to do here. I got a quote here. The team at DICE is working on a standalone Battlefield 5 update releasing this summer and continuing their work on delivering community games, EA said in a short statement, while the official blog provided more details on what to expect in tomorrow's Battlefront 2 update. So this was posted on this was like a couple of days ago, like 4 days ago. But my thing with Battlefield is there's a super, super core audience for Battlefield. And it just feels different than the other groups that are that are cult followers of a particular game. Like Battlefield people are like super Battlefield people. They're rarely other shooters that they're like, you know what? I don't even care about the other shooters. I'm only going to play Battlefield. And I have a very, very high respect for that. And that even made me get interest to even play the game, because I noticed how certain individuals were so married to that particular series, if you will. But yeah, I hope they bounce back. I guess that's my thoughts there.
I do too. And but their community, like you're saying, they're so diehards for them. And that's great. They actually really don't play really any other shooters. It's just that like you're, I feel like the ones that are really, really, really love what Battlefield does and offers them will rarely actually even touch like Call of Duty. Not to say that they don't play, like there aren't a lot of players who play both games, but there's some that are just like, Battlefield is for me and that's what it's going to be.
Right.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
Not for me anymore. It's been a while. It's not because I haven't liked it. I just kind of, at the moment and for a bit now, I've kind of just fallen out of love with shooters and I want to try some. Like I have access to Valorant. So I feel like by this point, everybody should have access to Valorant by now. But I haven't been compelled to just play it yet. I have it installed, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to, I'm not in that shooter like mood.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that one is laser focused though for a shooter.
It is.
Like super precise and all that. So I'll watch it from time to time, but I'd rather play things where, you know, the grenade may potentially damage me because it was in close proximity and stuff like that. Where they're, you know, stuff like hero shooters, like Paladins, you know, I'd rather play something like that than play Valorant. Valorant is super, super precise. So that's not my jam right there. So yeah, that's what's going on with that. So right here, let's do your review right here. So you mentioned that you checked out a jammy jam, Pixel Ripped. So talk to us about that and then we'll jump back into
my
stuff.
My first VR game. I'm so super excited.
Yeah. So walk me through that.
So Pixel Ripped 1995 is the second game to come out. The first one was Pixel Ripped 1989. So it's a game within a game within a game.
Okay.
So it comes from actually this Brazilian developer and publisher, Arvor. I think I'm saying that correctly, and I really hope I am. It really relies heavily on nostalgia. Let's start off with that. And that's what really, really drew me to really inquire about the game. And hopefully and thankfully, they allowed me to review it. It's obviously 1995. That's when it takes place, which I was like 11 at that time. And I feel like at that age, like 10, 11 years old, and you're playing games, it's like the right age where you don't exactly need an adult to really explain what's happening in the story. Like you're mature enough and you're developed enough to really understand and take in games. Maybe not super complex, maybe not your Final Fantasies of then, but you really start diving into it and really enjoying everything that's put into a game. And this game really does that really, really well. So there's a lot of nostalgia factors of the classic eras of your 16-bit that's slowly turning into 32-bit, you know, your first-gen console players. And there's a couple like little knockoff games that are included into it. So you take on as Dot, who by the assistance of a 9-year-old David, you're here to help and save the multiverse of the video games in his world, and you're working together. And it's not like a VR game where you're standing up and you're constantly moving. It's very stationary. So you're in this perspective of David, this 9-year-old boy, and you're playing, you know, video games in your room, in your living room, in the arcade at this, you know, video rental shop, which, you know, is in peace Blockbuster there. But it's like it's weird how it puts you into this perspective of this boy that's playing a game, and then you're also playing the game. It's such a weird feeling. I don't know how to explain that. Like, you're playing in the first person of yourself, playing the first person of a boy who's playing in the third person of another game of this platformer. But it's really cute. And I love the music, the art style. Like, it's just super nostalgic in so many different ways. And so you're trying to save, you know, this multiverse from this Cyblin Lord. That's what it is. He's the villain of this entire world. And I had, okay, let's start with the cons, because I don't feel like there's too many cons. So we'll start off with that, and then we're just going to bring it right back up, because I think everybody should at least give this game a try. I'm so used to playing VR games where you're just moving. So you got your Beat Sabers, you got your Synth Riders and O-Shape. It's a lot of moving. And there's only one other game that I played that's actually stationary, which is Resident Evil 7. So that's where you're sitting most of the time, just sitting stationary. You're sitting in your chair, because David actually doesn't move around. You can't explore the environment that he's in. You can look around, but it's not like you can get up in your bedroom and really interact with the environment that's around you. You can't do that really in your living room. There's very limited interactions, which I wish that you could go back and just really explore a bit more. So with that being said, it's a very linear game. Like, there's only that single path, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, especially for something that's kind of, you're following the story. Visually, it's kind of a little bit cartoony. It's kind of adorable. The mom, the parents are not, like, don't expect Resident Evil 7 VR, like, graphics with it. Because, again, nostalgia kicking in here. It's not supposed to look that, I guess. It's a polished game, but not that type of polished game where you're going to have all the wrinkles on their faces and little pores. You're not going to get that, but it's still visually appeasing, just the environment and the colors that they used. And I want to say that's kind of, no. Okay. So you're playing, there's one other thing, which is, like, it has the pros and cons to it. So the games that you're playing is, they're slightly knockoffs. Like, you're going to play games that are kind of very similar to, like, Super Mario World or Super Metroid or Zelda. But it's not exactly that. Like, you have the Rad Raccoon. That's good. And you're playing through those. And as you're playing with it, you kind of wish, like, it's like you're playing demos of those games. You're not supposed to play through the whole game within Pixel Rift, which I wish you could. I wish you could choose, like, a harder difficulties of these little games that you're playing within this world, because some of them are really, really good and really, really fun. And, or at least if not, add more, allow you to play more, like, you could choose your difficulty. I wish I could have done that. But it's really, you're just trying to defeat the Cyblin Lord. And that's kind of where the cons fall off of that. Other than that, it does rely very heavily on you just loving the 16-32-bit world. The storyline is really a lot of fun. And it's actually a quick game, which can be, like, a little bit hit and miss with some people. Because I know, like, say for Final Fantasy VII Remake, people weren't happy that it's, like, a 30-hour game.
What's
five, six hours.
Okay.
So there's possibility of just, like, a single playthrough, but for $20, I feel that it was totally worth it. So, you know, if I was paying more than $20, I think I would have been a little bit more upset. For $20, 5-6 hours of gameplay, and for a cute story, and to relive some of this, and to be in this, to be in a 2D platformer world of a game in VR is a really interesting and unique immersion. into that, you know, your typical platformers. And I love that. I absolutely did. I don't really want to give too much away because I feel like people should definitely give this a try, especially when you want something different with your VR system. Don't expect a whole lot of movement, which is awesome. It's a great game to end your VR session with. Because, you know, not to toot my own horn, name drop here, Yur is great for all fitness and VR is fitness, and we're pushing for that, especially during this time. But to just like relax and kick back, Pixarip 1995, like 100%. It's just super chill. And yeah, that's what I got to say about it.
Awesome. What's the toll on the body when you're doing the VR stuff?
It depends on what you're playing.
Okay.
This for Pixel Rift, super light. Super light. There's not like a whole lot of intrusions. You don't have to worry about your play space. It's like you're playing a regular normal game. But I mean, you are, as a 9-year-old boy, playing a regular game. That still blows my mind and I still love it. But this one's super, it's super light and relaxing. Okay. Here's another thing too. If you're just getting into VR, a lot of people deal with motion sickness. This game, because it's very stationary, there's no teleporting or jumping or weird, awkward, like snap movements at all. It's a really good entry into getting into it and having your first VR game that you can get used to that movements of how your head is moving and how your hands move. With this. So if you're unsure about playing certain types of games, Pixel Rift, I think it would be a really good start for that. For me, having say Resident Evil 7 being one of my first VR games where you have that teleporting movements, it did not sit well with me. I couldn't play the entire game in VR. I had to step out of that.
Okay. So
if I had to give it a scale.
Yeah. That's the next question. Yeah.
Out of five, I would say a four. A very solid four.
That's high.
It is, because it is a fun game. What prevents me from giving it a very solid five is the fact, again, it's like the replayability of it is low, and the fact that you can't really fully explore the environments that you're in, that I would have loved.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I'm trying to, I just came across a couple of things that I wanted to definitely mention in this particular episode. The first one is, thank you for that review. All right. I appreciate that. Appreciate that. First thing I wanted to throw in there, which was an original in the notes that I was looking at for today. Thursday, May 7th, Xbox is doing a Jammy Jam inside Xbox, showing some games for the Xbox Series X. Are you hyped, Daniela?
I am unsure.
Ooh, okay. Why?
Well, I want to see it, but I have not been fully on the Xbox train, like the physical Xbox itself. Let's just put it that way, because I've been loving what they've been doing, with the Game Pass. I love that, but I've been gravitating towards the games that are available on PC.
Hmm.
So. That being said, I'm not 100% sure if I'm like, I guess it really depends on the games, because as far as I'm aware right now that I've been keeping up with, like the second, I guess it Hellblade, I can't remember the title of it, but then the next iteration of Hellblade is going to be on the Xbox Series X, and that will be the reason why I buy it.
Okay.
It's just for that game.
Okay. All right. So I'm actually, I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to show. But in terms of like getting the Xbox Series X day one, that's not in the plans right now. But I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to show for that event. We'll see. We'll see how they frame it. We'll see what they show. We'll see if it's, because I like that a lot of the companies are localizing a lot of the games on the Asian market, which those games are amazing. And even some of the things that I'm seeing, like, that's going into the Streets of Rage conversation. I'll probably mention that during Streets of Rage. But I like that we can enjoy all the games, not just, you know, you have to import stuff. And I know that that may never change according to how things are set up. But I like to see what IPs they're going to bring to the platform that is known to make great games, especially in the Japanese market and Asian market and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to show.
Say for our household, we will most likely have day ones of PS5 and Xbox Series X. That is so much to say. Just simply because I love PlayStation and my boyfriend loves Xbox. So that's almost like pretty much a guarantee. We probably won't have two of each system, but we'll have one of each and try it out. And I know there's probably things he's really excited about. And me, I'm just like, just Hellblade. Oh, and whatever Assassin's Creed Valhalla will be on.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll jump into that. No, well, before we jump into that, before we jump into that, let's talk about Reggie Fils Aime is doing a podcast with Harold Goldberg. That's going to be a 7-series podcast. The first guest is going to be Jeff Keighley. And I'm excited that Reggie's going to be doing a podcast series. I want to listen to that. And it's looking to be like a fun experience, right? According to some of the things that I was looking at, Talking Games with Reggie and Harold is a 7-episode podcast featuring Reggie and Goldberg, and the latter of whom is the founder of the New York Video Game Critics Circle, which is a nonprofit organization that mentors those less fortunate in journalism and game development. And then it's also this is going towards, a good cause, you know, for individuals who are coming up and to get exposure in that particular scene. And they also, I think I saw a GoFundMe in there somewhere. Thoughts on that?
That man is a wealth of knowledge. And the fact that his first guest is Jeff Keighley, which I could just like go off on a whole other topic on Jeff Keighley, but I think we're going to be touching on that later. I would love to hear everything that they have to say, because that's just, it's just so much knowledge to take in.
I mean, since it's connected to the context, we can connect Jeff Keighley here.
Jeff Keighley is basically E3 himself. He is the embodiment of E3 at this point, because I was not expecting that Summer Games Fest announcement at all. And the fact that it's not like a single day or a single week, that it's over a course of like 4 months. Yes. All the yeses. And yeah, like it's amazing, because I love everything. Like, I am a fan of Jeff Keighley. He just does amazing thing. His worth ethic is amazing. What he stands behind, I'm sure he's failed many times in his career, but you don't see those failures. You see what worked for him, and everything that he's worked on and put into is built off of whatever failures he's gone through, whatever trials and errors he's done. So he's at this point where it's just like everything I feel like he's gotten behind has been amazing. And I love it. So whatever this Summer Games Fest is going to be turning into, I'm excited. I feel like it's a great alternative to the fact that we're missing E3 this year. But with that being said, it kind of makes me wonder, what's going to happen for E3?
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what's going to take place in the last couple of months, especially if they're already planning, as they mentioned, for E3 2021. And I don't know. But what I do know is that this pandemic has changed everything. Everything. You know, where individuals who are not necessarily caring about technology and stuff like that, you know, our seniors and our families, they're getting on that Zoom call. They're doing something. right? To understand, either they connect via phone or they want to see, you know, via video and stuff. So this is the new major shift in how we're going to communicate and do products to the world. And what he's getting ready to do with this all digital 4-month, okay, Summer Game Fest is, I'm looking forward to seeing what he has planned.
Me too. I'm just excited. Like even the short little trailer that they had to hype it up, I'm like, I feel like it's just going to be a bunch of like directs, PlayStation Directs, Xbox Directs, and Studio Directs, and Nintendo Directs, like a bunch of them, but of a higher, I guess, not, well, they all do some high quality work, but
yeah,
what we've never seen before and presented in such a different way. And I feel that because they're not trying to cram it into like a single expo and they have several months to do it and to elaborate and really do some deep dives, it's I know I'm putting it like super high, knowing almost next to nothing about it. I have some really high expectations that I feel like they're going to be meeting every step of the way.
Yeah, it's I dig it. It's inspiring stuff too. Like even when we were talking about the content creation stuff with the streaming platforms and all that earlier, it's inspiring to see how people are creating content and what you can add to your repertoire to take things to the next level. It's inspiring to see things like that. And I think that, you know, we should embrace it instead of as soon as we see it, you know, start judging. At least, you know, just give it some thought. Like you were saying before, you're talking about thousands of dollars are being spent to hit a brick wall to start over, right? And he's probably done that so many times that we would never know how much money he spent with those failed projects, if you will, that turned out to be the Game Awards, right? We don't know, right? And that even in the last couple of years have taken a different forms and have evolved to be better and better experience for the individual who is going to consume that content, whether they're sitting, you know, locally or via the streaming platforms or whatever. So we don't know. So when we're seeing things like that and we're seeing people iterate and make changes and adjust and stuff like that, you know, just think that all that stuff has a budget. And if it's not budgeted, they're using a lot of tools and then there's a learning curve for those tools. And if you don't have a team around you, that makes it even longer to execute on things. So just give grace a little bit. That's the point.
Yep. And I'm all signed up. I put in my email so I can be notified every time it's live. And I'm looking forward to my summer.
Yeah, it's and then like even like I was thinking about rewatching the Game Awards just to have a different take on it because it's been so while. It's been a while since I've seen it. It's been a couple of months. I really want to revisit it and just enjoy that experience again. So I've been going back into the archives of the YouTubes. But yeah, I don't have a lot of things left. But I definitely want to mention a couple of things because we did mention the Nintendo stuff not having their direct right away. I definitely want to talk about the Streets of Rage 4 before we close out by way of review. So let's hit, I think that's pretty much it. Let's hit Uncharted and then definitely talk about Assassin's Creed Valhalla and then we'll do Streets of Rage and then we'll close out. So yeah, Uncharted 4, deep fake, starting Nathan Fillion. Danielle, thoughts?
Nathan Fillion is Nathan Drake. That is it. Which, if you've been listening to us for a while, you know I haven't really played through the Uncharted series. So to see that cutscene and for the first time ever and to see his face, it just fit naturally to me. Just to see it. It's not because his face is so familiar to me. It just looks right.
Yeah.
And then to see the comparison, I'm like, nah, that's not it. But they did a really, really good job.
Yeah, I was waiting for the comparison at the end. I'm like, okay. So as I'm watching it, I'm like, okay, And then the acting is great. The acting is great. I really, you know, fell into the scene and I was captivated by the scene. I would have loved a little bit more tension at the end when she left and closed the door. I felt like there needed to be a little bit more of, you know, you lied to me all these months leading up to that particular event, right? Mm-hmm. Like a slamming of a door or something like that. Something a little bit more, you know what I mean? Like something a little bit
you
more.
You want that drama.
Yeah, I wanted that drama at the end because, you know, like, you know, you grow up watching soap operas. I wanted a little bit more drama at the end, especially with the door closing. It felt too light, you know, closing that door. So aside from that, that's just minor details of me looking into the scene. Watching the scene with Nathan's face on that particular model, I really had to remember how I watched it the first time, right? Because you're hearing his voice most of the time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like I totally forgot I forgot what he looked like until they did the side comparisons because I haven't played it in a while. So maybe that's fair, but it's a masterpiece what they're doing over there with that.
I feel like they just need to redo the entire series with just Fillion. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was good. So definitely check that out. Uncharted 4, Deep Fake, starring Nathan Fillion. It's a video. It's about 7 minutes. I'm sure if you do a little Googling, YouTube will show you that love. Beautiful stuff there. So there's that. And then, of course, something I was not really anticipating or expecting or even excited for, which I'm rarely excited for this series. But lately, they've been doing some incredible things. Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Danielle, what's up?
Oh, my goodness. I was really hoping for the day that they make a Vikings Assassin's Creed. Like, you have no idea. And even more so because I started rewatching Vikings itself on the History Channel. And the Viking series is, like, on its last season right now, and I think the next one I'm going to watch, what I was also told how to do with Vikings, is called The Kingdom, I believe that's what it is. It's on Netflix. But I love Vikings. I love the action. And anything really, honestly, to do with mythology of, like, gods, Thor, Odin, Freya, all of those. I love, and that's what also made, like, even Thor in Avengers, like, one of my favorite characters. It's just the entire Viking mentality and how, if it wasn't for all of those, just growing up and learning about Vikings and the fact that it was such a empowering vision to have of women, because even growing up with the knowledge and what I was told and what I read in books is that women were just, like, equal to the men. Like, yeah, they cooked, they stayed home, they had the kids, all that stuff. But they also were free women to fight alongside the men, and the men respected them as warriors. Like, that is empowering as a woman. And I love that. So now that, like, I got to see the trailer, like, when the day they released the trailer for Valhalla, I was hyped. I watched it before I went to work. I ended up going to work a little bit late. I, like, left my house a little bit later to watch this, like, 4 minutes some odd second trailer. And I was pumped. I'm excited. You have no idea. I love that there's going to be you can also customize your character, so you can play as male or female. You can customize the look as well too. But that entire fight scene. Was just glorious, and I really hope that they're going to be bringing back some of the sailing, because that's what I loved about Black Flag was the boats and sailing and going and making these ventures. So I'm hoping, based on that trailer, that's going to be a huge thing. And I saw that in the some of the pre-order stuff or the different editions that they have something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but there is a boat in there. I'm like, yes, right. Please. I want to go and sail and explore and, you know, raid these villages and towns. And reading into more of what they're going to be offering in the game itself is how you build the relationships with these people will affect how you're playing the story and the alliances that you make. I want it now. I don't care what platform. If it's going to be on Xbox, I will play it on Xbox. But yeah, that's how I feel. What did you think of it?
It's an incredible trailer. I'll say that. That's, you know, I'm thinking right now. I'm trying to build on it because when I'm watching certain trailers, I'm trying not to get caught up in the fact that, you know, I know it's a promotional tool. I know it's a marketing tool, and I know they're getting us interested into the next thing that they're getting ready to release, right? So I'm working through that aspect of me, okay? Yet, mm-hmm. I love action. I love, you know, drama. I love underdog narratives in any, you know, movie or any platform and stuff. So as I'm watching this, right, which I'm trying to play it without messing up the podcast in the background, right? So as I'm watching this, a couple of things sticks out, right? Of course, the Viking stuff, I think, is always cool. They start off with the children at the beginning, you know, the little girl and the little boy. We see emotion between the leader and how he appreciates the little ones, as well as, you know, the lady that put the blood on his face, right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's his girl or the wife or whatever. So, and they're preparing for battle. And they go into the next town and they're getting ready to do the thing. The scene with the boat stuff, I think that's really neat. You know, that's your jam. But I appreciate it for what it was. But when they were fighting and the town was on fire, they had the section where they saw the family and they spared the family and they let the family go. I thought that was neat, right? So like the little minor details, when you get to maybe just about a minute into the video, there's a section where the guy, he takes his axe and he throws it to a little boy. I don't know if that's in homage, a homage to God of War or anything like that, but that's what I felt when I saw that. Like, I immediately thought of God of War when he took his axe and he just threw it to the boy, and the boy caught it. So I'm watching it. So I'm in. I'm invested now, right? So the king is talking, and then the king does the thing with the seal, and then he puts the flame out and stuff like that, and then you go into the battle. So you get to the battle, and you're watching the battle play out, and the Odin showed up with the bird thing, right? That's what that was, right? Odin is with us or something like that?
Yeah.
Make sure I understand. Okay, so yeah, so I got that. And then the way the battle ended, or even before they got to the battle with the arrows and the thing, and when they docked, that was a good scene. That reminded me of kind of Gladiator feel to it. With all the arrows being in the air like that and flames, and then they start the battle and everybody's fighting, they're cutting, they're killing, they're doing the thing that they do in war, right? And then they get to the point where you know who you want to win, but it didn't look like he was going to win, right?
Yeah.
So I'm watching it play. I'm like, dude, okay. It's, you know, so we get hope that he's going to win when he see the Odin thing, the Odin, situation. And I'm like, okay, so they're going to win. But they crafted the fight in such a way where you're like, no, he's not going to win. Right? Then they send the executioner to fight, you know, the Viking guy. You know, like, you get the eye of the tiger. Yeah. So you get the eye of the tiger. So he see him coming down. And he's like, I'm ready for you, dude. I'm going to tear your skull. Right? So then he's heading in and they're fighting and stuff like that. I didn't think he was going to win. But I knew he was going to win because of the hope that they got. When eagle, falcon, what was fine? I don't know. It was a bird.
I don't know what kind of bird. I would say a crow.
Yeah. So I knew they got the hope from that, but it didn't look like they were going to win when he was fighting that super executioner guy. Gave him a knife to the knee. He took the knife out like it was nothing. So that whole situation got me really excited, and my hope is it translates into great gameplay, whatever that's going to look like. That's my hope. But if you watch that 4 minutes, and you feel nothing, I think you need to revisit how you see games. Because even in my critique of what I was watching and trying to understand scene setup and the king or whoever was on the horse was surprised that the battle was won by the guy, right? Even the look on the face and the CGI, whatever you want to call it, of the animation of that is compelling, right? It pulls you into the experience, if you will, of watching a trailer. And I think that's what it's designed to do. And yeah, I bought in. But it's a beautiful thing to watch these things, and I'm trying to enjoy them from the place of how I used to enjoy them when I was younger, right? I'm trying to get back to that place where I'm not overly critical of every single thing that I watch, every single minute or every second of whether that's shows or even trailers like that. So I was looking at it from a marketing standpoint too, because I get it. That's what it is. But at the same time, there's a lot to enjoy there as you're preparing for the experience. Now, if they crap out on the experience, then, you know, it is what it is. Because we've seen, what was that game or whatever it was that had the trailer play backwards, the zombie game? What was that?
Dead Island.
I don't think the experience matched that trailer.
No, that trailer is a whole league on its own, a whole different league.
Right. And then the other trailer that I'm thinking about, that Kara, the girl for amazing. She was singing, and you know, she was like, "Don't destroy me, please don't tear me up," because she was out self actualized as a robot, right? Mm-hmm. As an android. And that trailer, still one of my favorite trailers. You see, we have to like pull up some of my favorite trailers today. We may have to do something like that, but that's one of my favorites. Like the way they crafted that experience where he wanted to destroy her, but at the same time, he had empathy for an android, if that even makes sense,
yeah.
To let her live as who she believes she is, which is a human being, right? With emotions and feelings and things like that, but she's a robot. So that's one of my favorites to date. I may have to dig into the trailer bag and see what we can get out of that. But Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I like what I saw for a trailer.
I loved everything I saw. I'm just fangirling over it. I'm not even looking at it as a journalist or media or anything like that. I'm just fangirling over it.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It is. It's beautiful. And I think that too many times when I'm watching some of these things, I have a lot of tabs open. I just need to full screen it and then just enjoy it for what it is. So yeah. Pray for me. I struggle with that. But good stuff. Good stuff with there. Last but not least, if you have anything else, we can do the last thing.
I think that's everything I got.
Okay. All right. Let me just check the list real quick. Last but not least, let me see. Yep, DICE, Assassin's Creed, Last of Us, Jeff Keighley, Summer of Games, Uncharted, Streets of Rage 4. Yeah, that's the last thing. So Streets of Rage 4, I took the time to play Streets of Rage 1, 2, and 3 leading up to 4. So 1 was great, 2 was great, 3 was questionable because of the cliffhanger that it left in the series. It just felt, you know, was missing something. The music and 1, 2 were fantastic. 3 was questionable as far as the music because it didn't follow the same inspiration and even instruments in the first two games. So although it has some tracks that were okay, maybe 1 or 2 in a third game, it still didn't match up to the first two games as far as what it provided as a soundtrack. Okay. So characters were always great. They felt overpowered and balanced at the same time in the first two games. Third game was good in terms of playing through the third game. I think over the last couple of years, I only did like 3 playthroughs of the third game, but I played the first two a lot more. Okay. So there's a little metric there. So we get to the fourth game and we're wondering what that experience is going to be. From .emu, from Lizard Crush, from Lizard. Is it Lizard Crush? I want to make sure I'm getting that right. So I'm going to open up a tab without making too much noise, hopefully. Okay, so I'm going to go to, I want to make sure I get these names correctly here. Lizard Cube and Guard Crush Games, yeah. So these three awesome groups decided to tackle one of the most iconic games, game series, beat 'em up series, you know, of all time, right? Yeah. Three groups decided to tackle something. Hey, if you're going to touch it, you better not mess this up. Okay. So I bought the game. This is not, you know, press copy. So for those, you know, who are probably wondering, you know, I bought it. I don't usually buy a lot of things, but I had to buy this one. I had to play it day one. Right. So I'm playing through the game. There's 12 stages. You know, music is incredible. You could play some of the old tracks from the first two games. Interestingly enough, I don't think there are any tracks of the third game in this game, right? So I guess, you know, the research has done them really well. Don't add any track three in the third game and the fourth game. Don't do that. They're going to hate you, right? So whoever did their homework there, you know, congratulations, okay? You didn't play yourself, okay? So I'm playing through the game, playing through the experience, and there's a, I wouldn't call it a loot system, but there's a progressional bar. And when you get to a certain point in the bar, it unlocks, you know, characters from the previous games, which is cool. Okay. So you're able to play Axel from Streets of Rage 1, 2, or 3, and you can unlock all the characters from the first three games, right? Another thing I did see is I saw some characters that, although I didn't Google it yet, like Kangaroo, there was a kangaroo with boxing gloves behind a bar in one of the stages. I'm like, well, I want to play with Kangaroo, but I don't know if I need to play it at a higher level because I only played it through like easy and normal. I'm working through the hard mode now, but and there's also hard, and then I think there's Mania. So there's other levels that are like super crazy. There's an arcade mode, which it kind of treats it like the actual arcade where you only got one coin to go through the whole game. If you die in that process, then that's it. You're done, right? Like they used to do in the arcade game. You can switch the tracks from the old to the new and the options. It is beautifully hand-drawn characters. You have Axel, you have Blaze, you have Adam's daughter, you have Adam, and then you also have I may be missing some individuals there. You also have all the characters from the previous games. And I think I'm missing one character. But essentially, the experience is what we were looking for, we were expecting in the game. And I think it did the series a great service to bring the this fourth installment to a close. If they never make another Streets of Rage, they did a beautiful job with this game. So in terms of playing through the game, as we were hinting to a little bit earlier, I left, as I was testing the YouTube stuff, I pretty much was dropping in and out of co-op live for 6 hours. And with some guys, I was able to go through the whole game, and some individuals, either the connection was a little, you know, I guess they'll probably patch that. I did notice there's a patch version towards the bottom right of the title screen. So hopefully if they do make any updates to the game, maybe patching new characters and stuff like that that we can get later on, that'd be great to keep the series going. Maybe introduce some other characters that you can play from other games and then patch them into this game. I think that'd be cool if they decide to do something like that. I'm trying to see if I forgot anything. 12 stages. So this particular story is interesting because you're not playing as Mr. X as the enemy. Because that was your enemy in the last couple of games. You're actually fighting his kids. Mr. and Mrs. Y. Mr. and Miss Y. The brother and sister. Uh-huh. So you're actually going through the game to get to fight his kids. You know, there's some familiar bosses there. Familiar enemies that you beat them up along the way. You know, with the guy that does the flame thing. And of course, Shiva, which is one a cool boss character. You have the ladies with the whips. They're still there, you know, hand-drawn. Blaze is looking amazing, but she always has in previous games, so that didn't change, right? So all in all, they captured what everybody was anticipating and expecting for the game, and they delivered. And I'd definitely say it's like a, you know, it's definitely a 5. Replay value's high. It's really good.
I'm actually installing it now. Thank you.
Say Steam, please.
No, it's on Xbox Game Pass.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Do they offer some type of crossplay?
I don't know.
That?
I don't know. But yeah, I love it. I love beat 'em ups. I always have. So definitely shout out to LizardCube.emu and GarCrush for putting out a beautiful product. And I think that, GOT does not offer online multiplayer, even though from what I understand, it's the same selling price as Steam, which is weird. So be mindful of where you're, So be mindful of where you're buying your games. I just saw that as a news piece when I was scrolling through during the show. So just be mindful where you're buying your games. Like even now, I'm really buying a lot of Steam stuff and I just like the experience. I'm really enjoying the PC experience with my controller, and Streets of Rage 4 on Steam, you know, offers full control support and also multiplayer drop-in, drop-out co-op. I don't think I'm missing a beat, really, with not getting it on another platform, but I know it's a little sad that I can't play with some of my friends who used to play this game with me back in the day because they're on another platform. Outside of that, Streets of Rage 4, don't get it on GOG. Get it on any other platform but that, and make sure it has online support so you can at least do drop-in, drop-out co-op to get help and some of the later stages if you need it. So I love it. I love the game. I don't want to, you know, play it too much now, even though I want to play it today. I want to kind of like let it settle in as, you know, my thoughts on it and stuff like that. And then probably jump back in it, you know, later on with somebody else who has it on another, who has it on the same platform that I do have it on. But yeah, it's a great experience overall. I think you should consider getting it. Even if you don't understand beat 'em ups, just, I guess, watch some videos. You know, I have a 6-hour video for you, you know, primed, no commentary. So you can watch that a little bit and see if that's something that you'd be interested in.
Well, I'm getting it. I mean, we can always test it. I don't know. It doesn't say if there's, I don't think I see if there's cross-platform play. Well, not necessarily platform, because even on the Xbox Game Pass, I'm downloading it for PC. So.
Yeah. Keep me posted. That'd be great. If Steam and if they allow it, that'd be great. Or maybe introduce it later. Who knows? That may be a conversation that's happening in the background. Because I don't think you can, but if it does come up, I think we should, you know, definitely jump in and mash buttons.
Mash them all. Ooh, speaking of mashing, I don't know what, okay, I have one last thing, and I don't even know why that even triggered, because I was heartbroken about finding out about this last night, because I'm late. I think we talked about it like several months ago, that they were bringing back Legends of the Hidden Temple. And I know I saw that, like,
is that the tweet that you were posting the other day?
Yes.
When did you post that tweet? Yesterday?
I posted that late last night, because like someone told me that it was like bringing it, and I was like, what? And it's for adults. It's for adults. It's for me. I'm just going to say it's for me. But yeah, so there's a service or viewing streaming service, Quibi. Which I've been seeing a lot of advertisement for that lately. I don't have it, and I don't know really what's on it, but I guess Legends of the Hidden Temples for adult version here is going to be on that platform. And so they already posted out their casting for it, because I was like Googling everywhere, where's the sign up, where's the auditions, like what do I need? It was originally on their website, it's not there anymore, and that was like in March, and I was like, no, I hope you're filming and everything that is so delayed right now. It's like the only thing I'm hoping from COVID.
Right.
It's so delayed that they'll reopen it and I can go and audition for this, because it would be like a lifetime bucket list dream. Even if I don't win, just to be on Legends of the Hidden Temple. You have no idea. I don't even know who I'd be my partner, because if any of those questions have to do with geography,
oh boy,
I'm terrible. I'm absolutely terrible.
Count me out.
But like all of the physical activities, I am so in there for any of them,
because that's, I just want to play. I want to be a contestant. I want to be there. I will be Team Silver Snakes for life. I just, yeah, you have no idea. Olmec, please choose me. Just somebody.
Choose
somebody who knows somebody who knows the casting agent for this. And the thing is, I know that my current boss right now, she's like, she loves Nickelodeon things. Like, we grew up on this stuff. I know if I told her that if I wanted to put in a leave of vacation request for this, it'd be almost automatic approval. Like, I almost want to ask her if she'd be my partner.
You should.
But, I need to make this happen. Of all the game shows, kid game shows I grew up with, it's that one.
Hmm. You should.
I hope. I'm just like paying attention. Like, it's on one of my keyword searches for Twitter, for everything right now. Please. That's it. That's my big news.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm trying to see if I got to do a little Google check on the soundtrack for Streets of Rage, see if it's available on Spotify. I wanted to see what the track list is. But yeah, that's all I have. If anything, I definitely say, if you are listening to the show, definitely thank you for your continued support. Definitely support Daniela and her ventures as well as mine. That'd be great. And that's all I got. Daniela, close us out.
Thank you for tuning in and listening and checking us out. We appreciate your support, even if you're a first-time listener. For all our past shows and everything and all our information, you can visit us on the website, www.theshowradio.info. You can also catch us on your Google Podcasts, your Apple, oh my goodness, I can't, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Oh man, this is the worst signing out I've ever done. Man, this is like my first
time. No, don't say that. You got this, Daniela. You got this.
All your favorite podcatchers will be there. We will be there, such as Spotify. You can also catch up on all of our personal things and our ventures that's going on. You can check out Andrew at streamerlinks.com/Uriah, U-R-I-Y-Y-A. You can follow me, streamerlinks.com/MissDJM. Thank you all for listening. Have a great week. Be safe. And until next time, have a good one.